Well, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our meeting. At this time, could you please read the script for the meeting?
Yes, welcome. If you lose connection at any time, reconnect by clicking the link in your email invite. Committee members, please activate your video and keep it on for the duration of the meeting. Use the raise hand feature if you wish to speak, ask questions, or request a roll call vote. Staff, please activate your video when you are speaking and use the raise hand feature when you are asked a question. For members of the public, the name you entered in Zoom must match the name you entered in registration. You will remain muted until called upon by the chair. Please do not use your video. Chair, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Lisa. At this time, could you do roll call of officers, please?
Yes, Commissioner Claude Gilmore.
Present.
Gilmore, present. Commissioner Duane Gray.
Present.
Gray, present. Commissioner Greg Reed.
Present.
Reed, present. Commissioner Mary Strickland.
Present.
Strickland, present. Alder Isidore Knox.
Present.
Knox, present. Alder Tag Evers.
Here.
Evers, present. And Commissioner Madeline O'Connor is just entering. Commissioner Madeline O'Connor, we're doing the roll call.
Hello, sorry I'm late.
Perfect timing. All right. O'Connor present. Chair, a quorum is present.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. This time, I'd like a motion and second for the approval of the minutes from our September 12th meeting.
So
So
moved.
move. Or I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded that our minutes from our September 12th meeting is approved. We'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objections. In nine, motion approved. At this time, are there any public comment?
Chair, we do have folks registered for tonight's meeting. Jacob Morrison, Jeff Mack, and Adam Winkler are registered for agenda item nine, I believe, as presenters. And then Doug Hirsch and Gerardo Jimenez are registered also for item nine as being available to answer questions. Other than that, there are no members of the general public registered to speak.
I appreciated that. Are there any communications, Matt?
No communications.
We may want to mention that we might hold a meeting at Village on Park. Is that pending, or you will let us know?
It is pending some of the logistics required to have off-site meetings, given our new rules on recording and videotaping, but it is a possibility that next month would be in person at Village on Park.
Okay, we appreciate that. Are there any disclosures or recusals for this meeting? Hearing none, we have five items on the consent agenda. Items two through six are like a motion and a second for the approval of the consent agenda.
I move to approve the consent agenda.
Second.
Ray, second.
It's been moved and seconded that the consent agenda items two through six be approved and that we consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objection. Hearing none, motion approved. Next item is a discussion item of CDA resolutions 4630 for a discussion. Go ahead.
Yep, so this is just giving permission to one of our neighbors to access our property to trim trees. There's no other way for them to access the tree that needs to be trimmed. So this is there's no cost to it. We need to give them permission so that we can have it done.
Any questions? If not, is there a motion and second for approval?
I'll move approval.
Is there a second?
One second.
It's been moved and seconded that the resolution 4630 be approved, and we'll consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objections. Thank you. The next item is CBA resolution 462424 about an operating budget.
Anne, are you going to cover this one?
I can do that. Just like last year, how we had a little bit of wonkiness with HUD where they moved up the submission for our op sub. And so part of the requirements for that is that we have the board approve the budget. We're moving out of sync with the city. And so this is just so that we can submit our op sub budget or our grant, get the grant for the op sub. So this is our budget that we proposed to the city and asking for the acceptance of it by the board tonight. Let me know if you have any questions.
Are there any questions on the budget from the commissioners? Hearing none, is there a motion and a second for approval?
Mary, so moved.
Commissioner Gray, second.
It's been moved and seconded that the CDA resolution 4624 be approved, and that we consider this a unanimous vote unless there are any objections. Hearing none, motion is approved. Next item is the presentation of the Park Badger Redevelopment Master Plan Update. How do you want to proceed with that, Matt?
Yep. So just to be clear, so what we're giving you is a preview of the master plan. The idea being next month, you actually vote on the master plan document. So this is really to show you where we're at today, get any feedback from you. They've been to Urban Design Commission for some feedback. We've had a number of community meetings, but you're not taking action tonight, just to be clear. And we have representatives from our large development team and design team here to kind of walk through how we got to where we are. So I'm going to hand it to Adam, I think, to start us off, or to Jeff. I don't know which.
And Adam, you're on mute, and you do have access to share your screen.
I think Adam will kick us off.
Perfect. Can everybody see my screen?
Not yet.
No.
Let's try that one more time. There we go. Can everybody see that now?
Yes.
Perfect.
I can too.
Yes, so my name is Adam Winkler. I am with the Alexander Company. It's been a while since we've been before the CDA board. I think it was back in April, so thank you for having us back. I'm going to do a quick introduction of the redevelopment team because it has been a while and it is a large team. And then I'm going to turn it over to some of the other team members that are here present. All right, so we have the community, of course, getting in. Input from the community has been important. We have the CDA as the owner. The Alexander Company is the lead developer. Captains Inc. is the co-developer and has been leading the charge on public engagement and outreach. New Year Investments is the consulting developer. Potter Lawson has been doing the master planning and is the architect. OPN has the fire station design. Psyche Design has the landscape, JSD is engineer, and then JCP and JP Cullen have been helping us on some early construction numbers. From our team, I have Jeff Mack here and Gerardo Jimenez. They are with Captains. I believe Jeff's going to discuss the engagement, and then from Potter, after Jeff, Potter will go, and that will be Jacob Morrison with Potter.
So thanks, Adam. And then Adam, I'll just go to you to go from different slide to slide.
Perfect.
Perfect. Thanks. So again, I want to first and foremost just say thanks so much again for your time. I'll try and keep it quick, but mainly what we wanted to do is basically just inform you guys of kind of how things went from an engagement standpoint, and want to kind of take it back to the RFQ. The last time we all spoke was really more of a focus on the ResG approach and the four main pillars of that were inform, consult, involve, and collaborate. And those were kind of the principles that we tried to guide ourselves with throughout the engagement process. So Adam, can you go to the next one? Next slide. And so from an inform standpoint, right, kind of what that meant for us was making sure that all of our information, everything that we kind of did, everything that we tried to make sure that we presented and provided to the entire community, which was stakeholders, as well as neighbors, future residents, possible residents, business owners, the whole nine. How did we make sure we got that information out? And a lot of that was through basically, you know, the website, making sure that we all of our information was on the city website, as well as providing our own website, making sure we had it in both Spanish and English, making sure that we not only were doing things from a technology standpoint, you know, obviously internet, website, so on and so forth, but also door to door, walking around, actually providing pamphlets, paperwork, posters around what our first meetings were, when they were going to be, when our second meetings were going to be, making sure that the information could be accessible to all individuals. And so if we go to the next slide, it's on consult. And how did we really try to get that information and get that feedback to where we could actually implement it into the site and the massing? Really, that was a full-fledged approach that Gerardo and I really kind of took the lead on. And it wasn't just Gerardo and I. New Year, Alexander, they were at a lot of the events that we all went to as a team, because we wanted to make sure this was a community approach from our standpoint, from the development standpoint, as well as how to broach and how to connect with everyone in the community, not just the neighbors, but also the business owners. And so one of the things that we heard, and again, this is really a kudos to Alder Knox, was one of the main points was this is not a community that you can just set up Zooms and set up phone calls with. You have to meet them where they are. And I think Gerardo and I, as well as the entire team, did a really good job at trying to achieve that. We had over 75 meetings with area stakeholders. That was via email, Zoom, phone, one-on-one mainly, presentations to groups, really trying to figure out and make sure that everyone's voice was heard, but also we wanted to make sure that we were going to be there wherever they wanted us to be. Even going to events, community events that were held from May to today. Weekly meetings with CDA staff, obviously CDA, city, they are the owners, needing to make sure that their voices are heard, making sure that they are aware of all the things that we're doing, making sure that we're doing it in the right way with the right context and with the right mindset around it. Those were weekly meetings that we had on a regular basis, and then multiple calls, emails, outside of that. Meeting with DAT, the DAT team, we reviewed that project, was reviewed twice so that we can make sure we got the city feedback and basically that we were on the right track. And then just ongoing meetings with our major, you know, city and county partners with public health and the fire department. Really need to make sure that, you know, they were an integral part in this entire site and the entire plan. And we need to make sure that their voices are heard and that they were kind of leading the charge to make sure that they had a best-in-class facility. Next slide. And involve, right? This was kind of, all right, so we got this plan of collaborating. We have this plan of informing. Well, then how do we make sure that we involve everyone? And that was about outreach and how we were going to make sure that we had the voices and that we had individuals coming in and talking to us and telling us giving us their feedback and providing really key data points for us to be able to implement for the project. And one of the ways we did that was just through English and Spanish communications. We sent over 5,500 postcards, had over 600 emails. We had an email blast. We on our first public engagement, we made sure to collect emails. We made sure when we went out and we spoke to different people and different community members, that we got their email addresses, their contact information, and and sitting down with key stakeholders, giving us different individuals to speak with on a one-on-one basis. And then we had over 60 plus flyers posted for each first and second, or I'm sorry, together cumulative for the first and second public engagement meetings. So really tried to really make sure that we got the word out as quickly as as focused as we could. And then next slide. And then kind of this collaborative approach. And one of the things I think I spoke about, and I don't think anybody remembers, and you shouldn't, but in that first initial meeting was a discussion around, if we did these first three things correctly, this collaborative approach would kind of take care of itself. And I think we were able to really, really hit that, hit the nail on the head, so to speak. The collaborative approach really kind of came, we looked at it from like these three pillars that, these additional three pillars that the city had brought to us, which was gain feedback from building user groups, i.e. public health and the fire department. And I think we got that box checked. We did really well on that. Gain feedback from our stakeholders. And that's stakeholders thinking about it from the standpoint of it's not just the community, but it's the business owners in the community. It's not just the neighbors, it's the business owners, it's the churches, it's the business owners, churches, it's the nonprofit owners, it's the neighbors, it's the future residents of the building, it's the possible job seekers. These are all people that we wanted to gain feedback from, and I think we did a good job of getting that through the consultant mindset that we had. And then lastly, I think most importantly, you know, the project perceived by South Madison as a net positive to the community. I think we can say that with real honesty and with 100% certainty that we believe that it was a net positive to the community. We're not going to make everybody happy. We understand that. We know that. But from the standpoint of really what the goal was, I think it was to really see that the community could speak their points. We would listen, and then we would provide feedback, and we'd also try to implement it in some way. And I think we were able to do that. And so from here, I want to pass it on to Jacob, who will then go through the massing.
Great. Thank you. And thanks for taking the time out to hear our informational presentation. We just started with a quick overview of where we are to put us back in context of the location of the project. So you can see in this graphic here, the highlighted zone is the site question, with Village Mall and the Black Business Hub to the north, the new Centro Hispano to the west, and across the street there at Park Street, bordering us on the east, and of course, Madison College across the street to the south of us. Next slide. We just have a few views of our neighbors, including the Madison College and Black Business Hub, the existing police station that will stay during the development of phase one, but will be part of phase two. And then you can also see in the bottom left corner here the existing Bar Oak Senior living area. Next slide. So the master plan as it stands today is broken into two phases. The buildings you see here indicated A and B are part of phase one. And there will actually be a single building that have a shared underground parking structure. Building or Tower A will also house the public health of Madison Dane County on the ground floor and part of the second floor. Roughly 30,000 square feet of space that brings together a number of their services into one location. Tower B will house the fire station on the first floor and part of the second floor. Tower B, because of the fire station, will have a little bit more stringent structural standards. And you can see how we've handled the differentiation of the two as we go forward. Phase two on Hughes Place is indicated by the letter C. Phase two will be 100% multifamily instead of having these public components. And between the two phases, we have a connected greenway traveling all the way from Hughes Place down to West Badger Road that will also be near the new bus rapid transit locations that, among others, Madison College students will be able to use to get to the classrooms. Next slide. This is just a quick diagram of phase one and phase two. And in this diagram, you can see the below grade parking that combines the two buildings into one. Next slide. So we have some massing views, aerial perspectives to give you a sense of what the buildings will look like. As you can see, what I've been calling Tower A up on Park Street is the tallest, most dense building, fitting in with the Park Street redevelopment corridor and the increased density there. It's an eight-story building currently. The purple base of it that you can see in there is actually the public health component. And then next to it, the slightly shorter building at five stories would be senior housing apartments. little bit closer to the Burr Oaks existing senior. And then underneath and next to it is the fire station in orange there. And in both cases, we're looking, in all cases really, we're looking at not only having the green space at the ground level for the neighborhood and community, but using the podium roofs, that is to say, the roof above the fire station, fire truck garages, and over the public health as green space for the residents of those towers. Next slide. These are some views of the green space that we'll be developing. We are working with Psyche Design, and we've gotten public engagement on exactly what kind of features and amenities would be most useful and sought after. This will also probably be a place where public art can be installed. We don't have the public art worked out yet, but we are encouraging different locations that would be more prominent. Next station, next slide. And then we just have some overall views of the massings of the buildings. This top left one is the corner at Park and Badger. And that would be looking at the entrance to the apartment building there on the corner. And then you can see the purple of the public health wraps around it. Just to the right of it is a view sort of next to the McDonald's, looking more towards the Beltline on Park Street. And that would be the entrance to the public health. There will be some surface parking on the ground floor for visitors to the public health, so they don't have to go into the underground parking. The underground parking will be shared not only by the residents, but also by the employees of the public health, as well as the fire station. The bottom left is a very rough layout for where the fire station entry will be next to the senior apartments. And you can see it a little bit further back in the bottom right corner. And then the greenway also, you can see in the bottom right corner, just sitting next to that entry to the senior housing. Next slide. This is a cross section from Badger Road looking north, showing the 8-story Tower A, the 5-story Tower B, and the fire truck apparatus where the number one is. In the background, you can see phase two, which is that item marked C. Next slide. And this just calls out the surrounding context. This is phase one. So we're looking at phase one of the project. You can see the item mark three, which is the existing police station, which is going to become part of phase two. We do have to install a new lift station as part of the infrastructure change in this neighborhood, not just for our new development, but overall, and to also help handle stormwater, we'll be putting in some more infrastructure as well. That lift station will go into the phase two area, but it has to be built first. Go to the next slide, and you can see where phase two comes in. And the new lift station is that little square right behind building C. The next slide. This again is phase one, but now is a planned view. The number two is where the lift station is. The number three is where the police station is. And you can see that in phase one, we'll have the southern half of the greenway. And if you go to the next slide, phase two will bring the north half of the greenway. The access road you see cutting across east to west, we'll handle incoming traffic for parking in the below ground garage, as well as visitors to the public health. It will also handle fire trucks coming back, ladder trucks, to have access to come in from the back and pull into the rear of the fire station so they can pull straight through. Access all the way over to the west will likely be controlled by a gate so that everyday visitors don't travel into that back area. But we will have that back area be available for garbage trucks as well as service vehicles for the lift station. The apron around the fire station also accommodates being able to have their larger vehicles do Y turns or hammerhead turns to get back in from the rear and then be able to pull through. Next slide. These were our public art kind of first passes at possible places. Of course, once we engage an artist, their ideas may be in a different spot. And I really do think that any spot on this could be good for public art, depending on what that art is. It really kind of comes down to whether it's sculpture, painting, lights, or whatever it is. And we don't know what that is yet. So at this point, we've just gone through and marked some possible places that are very visible to the public and very engaging opportunities. And the next slide shows just some of the possibilities of projects either in town or in other towns like in Chicago or New York. that we could things ideas we could incorporate into the ultimate project. And at the next slide, and this last slide, I think it's the last slide, is a overall view of the green spaces. So you can see the north green space once it connects to that south green space. The south green space, it's worth noting that the fire station has a small public community room component, and the public health building also has a very large community room that they will use for all hands meeting, but it's also something that can be used for other public services. Both of those community rooms will then open onto that green space. So there are times when the green space can be activated, not just by itself, but from rooms within those buildings and maybe even across the green space. The northern half of that greenway will have private walkout stoops with some borders and barriers that then provide some privacy apart from the public greenway walking area. And as again, I mentioned in our engagement meeting, we got some really good feedback on the kinds of things that the neighbors and the community in general are really interested in seeing that we will incorporate into the final master report. And I believe that's the last slide. Let me see. The last few slides are our rough plans. And these are our plans just to make sure that the units and the parking stalls that we've called out in the overall tables do test out. And so I think the next few slides, if you go forward, have some more detail about where things will likely be located. These are not final locations, but as I said, they're used to make sure that what we're looking to get is realistic. The next one, upper floors. And then I believe that's the last. Yeah. And I'll turn it back over to our team. Thank you.
I guess with that said, we'd be happy to take questions. Or Matt, did you have anything to add?
No, I just for the board, this is your opportunity to ask questions, give general impressions about the direction that we're going as we head towards finalizing this report in the next month.
Alder Knox has his hand raised.
Go ahead, Alder Knox.
Yeah, were you able, I'm wondering if the team was able to synthesize or summarize some of the feedback we got from the breakout at the last public meeting. Maybe someone can kind of summarize what some of those comments or feedback was. Can you do that?
Jeff, you want to take that one?
Yeah, I can. So the breakout groups were one on the site, just the site in general, talking about kind of the size of the buildings. One was on what affordability was and is and what it's all really about. And then the last one was more or less a focus on the green space and community spaces and how the community would be would utilize them. And for who would it be for? So when you think about the community, so I'll go to that one first. When you think about the community and the green spaces, there's a community space where the larger community, i.e. the neighbors, would have usual access to. And that's kind of that walkway from from Badger to Hughes. And then there's also the green space that is focused and more primarily for the residents of the space. And so we talked about the differentiation of how those spaces could be used and what could be implemented there. Regarding the site, just really conversations or questions and concerns around height, around size of the buildings, units, making sure that there was a proper mix for multi-generational housing, but also there was some separation from having more focus on or having separate or individual buildings that are allocated toward just senior housing, and then also for multi-generational housing as well. And that's in the first phase. And then the last breakout group, Alder Knox, was mainly around just kind of a informational discussion around what affordability is and what that looks like. You know, what are the rents for a one bedroom or two bedroom based off of AMI, you know, median income limits and so on and so forth. And so, and that was stuff that we heard or information that we, or feedback that we had gained from the first public engagement meeting, really wanting to have a much more in-depth understanding. And one of the things that I think we've always talked about, and actually my partner Gerardo talks about, is like clarity is kindness, right? Which I think is a really good North Star to kind of have when we communicate and connect with the community, making sure that they're we try to be as clear as we can with what the, you know, what we can work with and what we can work on versus what we can't, and then making sure that they have all the proper tools to gain the necessary information they need to be able to understand the project as a whole.
Okay.
Hopefully, does that answer your question?
It does. I guess I'll share a few comments that I received, and then maybe someone can elaborate on this. So, you know, from the beginning, one of the biggest, the early main issues was height and density. And I know people had made some comments about the height, and you all shared how the building A is 8 stories, and then it goes down to B, which is, I believe, 5, correct? And then maybe in phase 2, I'm not sure if the height of that building would be 5 as well. And you kind of shared, the group shared how it masks downward as it gets to the interior of the site. So I guess one of the conversations I had with a couple of people were, given that most of the other buildings around there are at 6 stories, was there a possibility to reduce the 8-story building, maybe add to the 5-story building, and then maybe whatever other capacities could go, maybe at, if the C building was, say, 6 stories, you know, in other words, 3 6 stories versus 8 5 and you know, 5. So can someone talk about the logistics of what's the feasibility of that? Does that complicate the project? Give me some feedback on it. You understand the question, Jeff?
Yeah, I understand the question. Yeah. I think let me figure out who might be the best point. I don't know, Jacob, do we want to speak a little bit to that?
I can speak to it a little bit. Adam may want to weigh in a little bit as well, but I can give you the high-level view.
Just keeping in mind that 8-story would probably be a set of precedent for height currently, you know, in that whole area. So maybe you can go from there.
Yeah. We had the 8-story, as you alluded to, on the Park Street side as a way to move the dense, shift the density a little bit over towards Park Street. There is, in addition to that, an efficiency to that size of a building with that structural system, so that the cost per unit actually gets more, it gets better as you get more dense. The smaller buildings will be slightly less efficient. In this case, with the fire station as well, because we have an increased seismic load, that building will be slightly more expensive, and adding floors to it is also more cost prohibitive. So it does make more sense to add floors to the building that won't have that seismic component to it. That's the high level architect's point of view. And I think, Adam, if you want to add anything to that.
No, I think you hit it right on the head that, you know, with that front building and with the parking structure, post-tension concrete and going up 8 stories, it's more efficient to do the post-tension concrete. But when you get back to the B building, and you talked about all the seismic implications and the existing size of the building, it's 5 stories, which is kind of maxing out the kind of construction where you do wood frame construction. So you really can't go higher than that without going to post-tension concrete.
And so, would it be...
If in the city of Madison, we very rarely see 6- and 7-story buildings because of these construction code issues that they're talking about, is when you get above 5, like you're flipping into a different part of the code that becomes expensive to build normal stick built. And so you kind of have to, people usually jump up to 8 to start to make it be economical, because then you're right, you're flipping into a different type of construction. So we just very rarely see 6 and 7 story buildings in the city of Madison.
Well, if you look around in that area, though, that's what you see.
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
So a building like the Hub is as tall as a 6-story building, but it's 4 stories because it has very tall floor heights. Mm-hmm. So it reads like a 6-story building, but it's actually only 4 floors. Yeah, and same with Madison College is only a 2-story building, but it reads like a much taller building because, again, it has these really big floor heights because of the use they have in it.
Okay, so where is the 8-story building in the area off your head, offhand, Matt?
No, you're right. There are not 8-story buildings in the South Park Street area. Yes, this this would be the tallest building in South Park Street.
Okay, so cost is a factor, materials a factor. What was the thinking for phase two, that building? In terms of height and density?
Right now it's called that, it's a little bit more generalized, but it's called it as 5 stories, 120 units.
Okay, all right. So there's no possibility to kind of even out the height loads across the site for the buildings? That's what keeps coming back to me. And I don't know, I keep hearing cost. I heard something about cost, the construction materials.
The other thing, Adam, can you talk a little bit, like, because we're using tax credits on these, there's a mm-hmm. certain number of units that we kind of need to hit to make it fit into the tax credit program well. Can you discuss that?
Okay, so that's the third issue.
Yeah. We would be doing this as probably a 4% deal. I mean, we're kind of in the early stages of the projections. We just kind of have a roadmap at this point. And the amount of units that we have at this point seem to be more in line with making a deal with less of a gap.
Okay. So I think it's going to be really important that those kind of issues are articulated when this project moves forward, because that's going to be one issue of, you know, of concern that the community is going to have, which they had from the beginning. So it's going to be important that you raise those issues of the material costs, the per unit cost, and the tax credit issues. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Mm-hmm.
I guess, do you want me to?
Commissioner Strickland, go ahead.
Okay. I just want to make a note. I know that Alder Knox has had these concerns about density. I live off of Old Milton Road and University Avenue, and there have been many brand new apartment buildings go up on University Avenue towards Middleton, and they're all about 4 to 6 stories. I don't think they're, except for the Hilldale by the Whole Foods, which is taller, all the rest of them are 4 to 6 stories. So there's a lot of brand new development in that height range. There's probably at least 8 buildings I'm aware of till you reach the border Middleton. Anyway, but my question is, can someone review for me what, when all the phases are complete, what the total number of units will be approximately? And number two, what the total number of affordable units will be?
I can,
Jacob, I think you have the latest numbers. I mean, I could give the rough estimate of, so yeah, in the first phase, there's roughly 250 units. And then for that second phase, probably about another 100.
I think we came out to about 364 units total, yep, between phase 1 and 2.
And the percentage of affordable?
And right now we're running the projections as though the project is 100% affordable.
But affordable at a variety of income levels?
Yeah. 80, 60, 40, something like that?
Yeah, I think we'd probably start at 70% and go all the way down to 30%.
Can you translate that a little bit? When you say 100% affordable, maybe that's Matt's question. I don't know.
I don't have my, I could answer that question. Are you talking about in the terms of what rents would be or what the income limits would be?
Probably both. I don't know. Well, we just want to make sure she asked that question, and that was a key. That was a key breakout question. People wanted to know what affordable is and what does that mean in terms of income and probably rent. We know that CDA has a sliding scale, right?
Yes.
Based on so income.
Yep. So this will So these will be all the way from 30% AMI up to 70%. So if you look at our portfolio, this would be something. So it's not going to look like public housing, which is all very low income. This is going to look more like our other tax credit developments, like Burr Oaks right next door, or Monona Shores, which is 130 units of mixed income housing. So it's going to look more like those properties in your portfolio, with a good amount of it sitting in that 50 to 60% AMI is going to be probably the bulk of it.
And Matt, I grabbed my chart of the incomes and the rent. So Alder Knox, just to give you an idea, for a household size of one, 30% AMI for the income is $26,460. 50% is $44,100. 60% AMI is $52,920. And 70% is $61,740. And then if we want to convert that into rents for, at the 30%, that's $708 a month. For 50%, it's $1,181. 60% is $1,417. And 70% AMI is $1,653. And the way those numbers are derived, looking at somebody's income, somebody shouldn't be paying more than 30% of their income on rents. Otherwise, they are considered cost burden. As we know, in the city of Madison, there are 35,000 households that are cost burdening. And out of that, I believe there's 20,000 that are extremely cost burden, which means they're paying more than 50% of their rents. So the way they set those rents is so that somebody's paying no more than 30%.
And on top of this, you'll have the ability to stick project-based Section 8 vouchers on a portion of the units if we choose. We're just not far enough along in the modeling to know, does it make sense to do 8 or does it make sense to do 30? But we'll get to that as we keep progressing.
Just a follow-up question. Is this number of units, 360 or so, with both phases, is this lower than, it seems like a number lower than initially projected. Is that true or no?
Yeah, so we initially modeled that if you built to the maximum allowed by zoning, that number would be more like 600. But because the building heights were reduced a bit as we head west, but also fire stations are tricky to build around. So you'll notice that the B building, the actual footprint is significantly smaller because you can't really build underneath where a fire truck has to go, and the fire truck needs a lot of room to make turns, which kind of limits some of the size. We also, I think, wanted to make sure we kept a good amount of open space on the site, so that did reduce the total number of units from 600 down to the 350, 360, I think.
So that responds a little bit to Alder Knox's concern of density, et cetera. Let me just ask one last question. Are the tenants going to be subject to the new tenant criteria that was approved by the council recently?
So I think that yes, I mean, our funding source for most of this is the city of Madison. So I think we would comply with the tenant selection plan criteria that's outlined by the city for their funding.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner Strickland. Commissioner Reed, go next.
echoing Alder Knox's previously stated concerns about height, I just was thinking, Jacob, when you were using the term tower, that just made me kind of bristle, because it seems like the wrong word to use in describing the project with that hypersensitivity to the height issue. So maybe there can be a different choice of words when presenting the project. Can somebody scroll back up just to show what the corner looks like for the taller building?
This slide right here?
Yeah.
Why don't you go, in addition to this slide, there's another, I think, two down that might show it more at street level.
Okay, I guess one question I had is, especially given the concerns about height at the corner, you know, I do think a major intersection is probably the best area to have that height, just because you have more space and breadth around it. But is there a way to perhaps have some of the height actually at the rear of the property, so that you don't have that massing at the corner? You know, similar to perhaps how Olive was built because of the State Street setback requirements with the historic district. You know, is there a way to shift the massing a bit? And, you know, in that manner, could there maybe be, you know, could you even go over 8 stories toward the back, just so you don't have such an imposing, you know, facade along that, right at that intersection, just so that it doesn't appear so imposing. And I guess the other question I had is, what are the soils like? You know, is there a way to bury the building perhaps a little bit more? And what's, I don't remember hearing what the description was for the use of the ground floor. Is that going to be retail? Is that going to be residential? How is that going to get used?
So there's a lot of questions there. Hopefully I get them all. First of all, good note about the word tower. I appreciate that. And I will say portion or something else. I'll find a good word. That's an excellent point. The ground floor of the building, that section in purple, is actually the public health in Madison and Dane County. Mm-hmm. That takes up the entire first floor, other than the lobby for the apartment building. And we do have a minimum first floor elevation of 882'6", which is about 4.5 feet higher than the curb at the corner. That's to do with flooding. So we can't actually bring the first floor down any lower than that. We do have the massing currently towards Park Street for a couple of reasons. One, we have to have the main entrance into the residences on Park Street as according to the zoning requirements. And we want to get the elevator and stairs right off of that main entry. And so that means that the main height will be the tallest near the elevator. The other reason we put it there is to give some more light and air to the greenway down the middle. To push it away from that so it gets more sunlight. So those are the reasons we did it this way. That's not to say that it's necessarily the only choice, but it's the reasons we laid it out with the massing in this orientation.
Yeah, thank you, Commissioner Reed. Commissioner Khan, go ahead.
Sorry, did you say Commissioner O'Connor?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you for the presentation. I just had a couple quick points of clarification. Can you scroll up to the top view from above? So that in this space behind the fire, what I think is the fire station, or there's the it looks like a tennis court or something at Area B, just above that. Is that part of the fire station, like access routes?
It is, and that's actually, you have a very good eye. That's actually a basketball, half-court basketball that would be painted on the concrete. The fire station really wants to engage with the neighbors and the people in the buildings, and it was their idea to include a basketball court. So not only could their firefighters use it, but they can have people in the buildings use it. Because this is coming back, people coming back from a fire and not leaving in an emergency, they can use it and it won't be a big deal. Obviously, we can't have anything in front of the fire station because that's where the emergency vehicles are responding as quickly as possible.
So that's flat concrete. That's not the roof of a building.
No, all that gray in there is just concrete driveway. That is so the fire trucks can have enough space to turn around and enter from the rear of that building B and then pull out through the front when they leave for an emergency.
But where you see the letter B is the rooftop of the apparatus bay, and that is
that is
a pickleball court on the roof.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Thank you. And then Adam, you said something about, you were talking about the density and the effect on the financing. You said the project is likely to be a 4% project. Can you just clarify what you mean by that?
Yes. So WIDA has two different types of tax credits. There's the 9% tax credit, and then there's 4% tax credit. The 9% credit is a competitive credit that generates more credits. But like I said, it's competitive, and typically a project this size, you wouldn't do the 9% credit. With the project being as large as it is, and with the amount of units, we're doing the 4% credit, which is a by right more. So there is not the competition that you have with the 9% credit.
Okay, thank you.
Chair, can I just note that you do have a 5:30?
Yeah, we do. Yeah. So I didn't know if there was anybody, any more comments. Who did?
Commissioner Gray.
Commissioner Gray, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you all for the presentation as well. And I make this quick because I know we're running out of time. So I know initially when this project started, we were very excited about certainly having you guys kind of lead us in this development. And also one of the things that kept coming out, and I like the fact that, you know, you guys talked about informing and meeting with the residents of the community, but I think they put a lot of emphasis on, they didn't really want a lot of, I won't use the word tower, but they didn't really want a lot of huge buildings in that area. And so when I see you guys come back with a presentation, you got 8 stories, you went above and beyond what, you know, besides any other building in that community would exist. Could someone just kind of explain the rationale behind that? Taking into account and consideration all the concerns that the neighbors and the residents kind of expressed about not having a huge, one person referred to it as a ghetto type environment with having huge buildings in their community.
Jeff, you want on, or do you want me to take that?
I mean, I'm happy to take it. I think Mr. Gray, you know, one of the things that, what I guess I would say is, you know, there's a lot of balancing acts that you have to have in a development of this caliber and this nature. And one of the things we had to figure out was there's so many different pieces of the puzzle from the standpoint of the financial feasibility, to the fact of literally what we needed to make sure was that our community partners, i.e. the fire department and public health, had the proper amount of space that they needed to be best in class and needed to be able to function. Because one of the things public health is doing is they are, you know, kind of basically condensing and consolidating a number of their resources all at this one at the site. And then there's a gender equity piece that goes into the fire department that needs to be had and needs to be made and needs to be implemented. And so, and because they can't be very dense and they can't go vertical, they need to be more spread out. And so the other piece was what we heard from the community more than anything was unit count. And so what we were trying to do, and that was why you see this kind of this tapering, I guess I would say, of the buildings of A, B, and C, we needed to try and figure out a way to the to be able to meet that need, but also then have this financial feasibility need that we needed to make, which was how do we make these deals make sense on paper to where it can even get done financially. And so there has to be some density because it's necessary for the overall viability of the building to be built. But then what we tried to do is, and I think we did, and I hope you all see it that way, was we tried to make sure that the voice was heard, or that the feedback was heard around making sure that the unit count wasn't so great that it would create a proverbial,
right,
you know, the slum or a ghetto, as you stated. One of the things though too, and I always wanted to stress back to some of the individuals that actually did bring that up to us, was that in reality, this is not, if you really, the work that you all do at the CDA, I mean, this is tried and proven over and over and over again. There's a number of different statistics and documentation that supports this. When a community development authority, a city management team runs these, that is not the case. There's not that type of slumming of the community that happens. I think you guys do a fantastic job, and you should give yourselves pats on the back for how you guys manage buildings, because that's the other piece that was also very heavy, was a conversation around, well, who's going to manage this site once it's done, and are they going to be local? And so I think what we tried to do is balance all of the different variables that come into play, Mr. Gray, to be able to support and be able to provide this this master plan. There's just so many different pieces of the puzzle that we have to figure. There's some things that aren't going to be able to be accomplished, but then I think we were able to accomplish some of the other pieces that the community was very, very vocal on. I hope that somewhat answers your question, but I also know that we're running short on time.
We are short of time at this point. Matt, I think I'm going to have to forget the last item on the agenda because we need to move to the next meeting. Can we table that and move that to the next meeting?
I think that's fine.
Yeah. So at this time, I want to thank you guys for presenting. We'll get the more detail of this next month when we will have a vote of this. But I think it's been a very good discussion. Are there any other items before I close this meeting? And I think, Lisa, people will have to log off of this and log back in for the MRCDC meeting, correct?
That's correct. So this, as soon as you guys motion to adjourn, then you'll exit out of this meeting. And for the MRCDC Board of Directors, you'll use the link in that invite to join that meeting.
And that includes everyone, I think, excluding myself.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. So at this time, I'd like to have a motion for adjournment.
I'll move to adjourn.
Second.
It's been moved and second that we are in adjournment. Again, thank you all very much for a very good meeting, and take care.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate the presentation.
Thank you for the presentation.